Hi, everyone. My name is Addie.
And I'm Shira.
And you're listening to
It's Complicated, the podcast. You may have heard of us before. We used to have a column in the opinion section, but now we've become travel-sized for your hot girl walks and when you need some advice on the go.
And if you're new here, welcome. It's Complicated is a space where we talk about everything surrounding love, dating, relationships, friendships, and most importantly, love for yourself, because as we know,
it's complicated.
We are back from hiatus, folks, and with these gray Seattle days, it's hard to see much of romance anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've talked about the tropes and the best books to curl up with when you're deep in yearning and feeling romantic, but there's a whole other side to romantic media, and it exists on the big screen. Rom-coms are a sacred tradition in my family. Growing up in a house full of girls, my dad got his fair share of Friday night swoony romances, and now he's like the biggest fan of them all. I feel like having a favorite rom-com is like having a zodiac sign. Like, your pick has some weight to it.
Yeah.
Maybe you're like me, and you fantasize about the golden age of rom-coms. And if you know anything about me, you know that my forever girl crush is the one and only Meg Ryan.
Because of the hair. And I do have an anecdote about Meg Ryan about the hair.
Tell me more.
Okay, so I will tell you more. So I had been growing out my hair, and I decided to go get a haircut. And when I went to get my haircut, what did I want it to be? Picture of Meg Ryan. That is what I showed my hairdresser.
Amazing.
It was because after I'd been watching When Harry Met Sally, which I'll talk about later, but so I showed it to my hairdresser and I was like, this is what I want. I want my hair to look like this. I want to, like, you know, you to twirl my chair. When I look back in the mirror, I look like that.
You are Meg Ryan.
And I am her, actually.
Yeah, the Rachel haircut is out.
Exactly. The Rachel haircut was out.
Sorry,
this
Jennifer.
This was 2021. So. And then my hairdresser was like, you do know this is all hairspray.
I know. She's got all the volume.
Right?
The bangs, and so I think, like, are really what sell it.
No, I know. And, like, she has, like, a lot of, like, curls and stuff I don't have, so. Mm-hmm. So I did not walk away looking like Meg Ryan, which is really sad. But, yeah, so personally, I would say my introduction to rom-coms is kind of similar. I don't know if it was, like, a sacred tradition, but for anyone in my family except for my mom, who forced us to watch When Harry Met Sally every New Year's. And yes, there is a thing called, like, a New Year's movie, just like we have Christmas
movies.
There is New Year's movies, and When Harry Met Sally is the number one New Year's movie.
Oh, when Auld Lang Syne comes on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
Exactly.
Gets me going every time.
Every time. And he's like, what is this song about? And she's like, shut up.
Oh, old friends, Harry.
Exactly. And then I have to say, like, on the first through fourth watches, I was kind of still iffy. Not on the genre of rom-coms as a whole, but more just kind of on When Harry Met Sally. And I guess, I don't know, just the, maybe the kind of cheesiness aspect of rom-coms.
Oh,
where
definitely.
I was more into, like, Marvel and action and all that stuff. But on the 16th through 18th watches,
that's when it really sunk in
it
for you.
It really sunk in that this is the best movie ever made, and I now will die on that hill.
No, I stand by that. When Harry Met Sally is my favorite rom-com of all time.
Exactly.
I don't know what it is about it. I mean, I think Meg Ryan obviously plays a factor. But When Harry Met Sally is just timeless. And I think an important part of that is it's not just from the perspective of the woman.
Exactly.
I feel like a lot of rom-coms kind of take that stance. But this was the classic men saying, like, men and women can never be friends because they're just going to want to sleep with you. And I feel like if you sit down with someone and watch this, they're going to be like, yeah, like, that makes sense.
Right?
Like, rom-coms aren't all just the cheesy romance, folks.
Exactly.
Like, they're real.
Exactly. Exactly. I so agree. And I also think a big part of it is that the both of the characters are flawed, but the movie knows that they're flawed. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're trying to cover it up, like, oh no, this is the perfect, like, Sally's the perfect, like, all working woman, American classic woman who's a journalist, and she's like, no, Sally has issues.
No.
She doesn't understand love, and she fails, even though she has, like, a very traditional boyfriend, and their relationship is very, you know, by the books perfect, but they still end up breaking up, and she's, like, crying about, like, she has, like, a whole meltdown, like, she's not the perfect person. And same with Harry, who is very flawed at the beginning. And I think, like, when I was watching with my friends, they didn't like Harry, but again, when you watch it 16 to 17 times, you start to, like, you really feel for Harry, because I'm Harry. Like, I feel like I change my opinion on things, and I might be, like, waking up one day and having this very strong opinion about relationships, and then I go to sleep at night, and it's, like, so different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't know, I love it.
Yeah, no, they definitely grow from each other. They get, you know, the traits that the other person has. I think my favorite part in the entire movie is when Sally, she just had broken up, and then she finds out that her ex-boyfriend is now engaged to be married.
Yes.
And she's sobbing, and she's crying, and she's like, I didn't even want to marry him, but why didn't he want to marry me? And if that is just not my internal monologue at all times, I don't know what is.
I love it. I love it so much. It's so true. And I love Carrie Fisher. Yeah. Oh, Carrie Fisher is amazing in it. Carries
she
it.
Is.
And carries. Carrie Fisher carries.
That's a slogan. I've never heard one.
And I love where when she meets like the Harry's friend, which I forget his name, but it's like Harry and Sally have been like going back and forth in like all these failed relationships, and Harry was literally like married and they got a divorce, so it's like a huge thing, and then they just meet for 1 second at the restaurant and now they're married and like they have the best relationship. And I love that, like, and I also think that is pretty true. Like, I think sometimes it just clicks and sometimes it doesn't, and like I love
sometimes
the dynamic.
It's a slow burn, like 10-year friendship you like find your husband, or like you said with Carrie Fisher, she meets him because she read his article
exactly
in the paper, and I'm like,
so perfect.
Can that happen to me?
Right? And he quotes, I love, or she quotes him, and she's like,
I've never quoted
exactly. No one's ever quoted me back to me before, and it's I love it.
So I could spend this whole episode just talking about When Harry Met Sally, but that's not fair to our favorite
to
genre.
Other rom-coms, exactly.
So let's talk about some of your other favorites. I think we can't even have this conversation, though, unless we go into the era of the rom-com eras.
Yeah.
There are so many different types of rom-coms. There are subgenres within this big, vast genre that I was looking up, and I didn't even realize that you could classify them as these. So you've got everything. Like, you, what I like to call the golden age, where it's New York City. It's either fall or spring. There are no summer,
no
romances
winter
in New York. No, that doesn't happen.
Maybe like a rainy day, but no snow.
Oh, maybe a rainy day one day.
One
when
day.
The character's going through conflict.
Exactly.
And she's staring out her window.
Exactly.
Wistfully.
Like tea.
Yeah, exactly. So the golden age of New York, which is some of my favorites. I think it includes things like anything Meg Ryan's in. Honestly, like, you've got Mail with her and Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
That is a classic New York
amazing
love story. I mean, and when you think about it, New York is kind of the setting for a lot of romantic scenes to take place.
Yes.
Like, even Sex in the City.
Sex in the City,
Sex in the City is a love letter to
New
York.
Yeah.
And I think there's something so exciting about a city full of so many people just trying to figure it out. There's art, there's music, there's clubs, there's dancing, there's restaurants. It's like a little globe.
Exactly,
just
in
New York City.
I think that's why it works so well for rom-coms. It's like the whole idea that you can just bump into the person next to you and they're gonna be the next love of your life.
Exactly. It is the scene for meet cutes
and love and love is in the air. Exactly.
And now I feel like rom-coms are kind of taking a more modern turn. Like, Set It Up, it is about two assistants that are working for these two bosses, and it's kind of a workplace enemies to lovers kind of thing going on. You would love it.
Really? Okay.
But there's this modern age coming in, and then even one of the key factors, I think, to these modern day romances is this reverse of the gender roles. I think there's a lot more queer romance in the media.
Yes.
I think it's becoming much more inclusive, and it's more fun because we're not getting the same old stories time and time again. And I think that also started from when rom-coms didn't have this happily ever ending romance aspect to it. Like, I always think, I just watched My Best Friend's Wedding with Julia Roberts. And she doesn't get the guy in the end.
No, she doesn't.
She ends up completely alone. Well, no, she ends up with her best friend.
Yeah.
I mean, her, like, other best friend. In a non-romantic way.
Non-romantic,
it's a movie where nothing really works out, but you're still, like, hanging on to the very end, you know? It's a whole story about how maybe you don't get the guy, you know, quote-unquote, of your dreams.
Yeah.
But who knows what's around the corner again.
But I love Julia Roberts in a rom-com. Like, I think she is amazing in drama.
Well, she's got the most expressive face. Her big old smile.
Exactly.
And her crazy hair.
Right? But it's like watching her in a rom-com is just like Notting Hill. There's just something about her that is so fun. And I love, I mean, I hate the like not other girls trope, you know, and like the idea that there's only one type of girl.
Yeah.
Because that's just so weird. Who decided
just
that?
One.
Just one.
Just
type.
One girl.
But I love that in Notting Hill, she's very like, she's very herself. She's very authentic and blunt and rude and mean. And it's like, I love her.
No, completely.
Yeah.
I loved her in Pretty Woman as well.
Yes.
That's one of my all-time favorites.
Yes. You know, that's definitely not rom-com.
No.
It kind of is. Sort of.
It plays the fantasy trope. Like, the maybe you're a hooker and one day classic. You end up with the millionaire. It's,
exactly.
It's the best.
It's, yeah, I guess I wouldn't say it's like all comedy. Like if we're comparing like that to like Notting Hill. Yeah. Like it has a lot more drama and like sadness and like aspects to it.
That's very true. There's definitely some weight, either exactly. more romantically weighted or more comedy related. I yes. think like a great example of that is Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah.
Which I'd consider a rom-com completely, yeah. but it's definitely more comedic.
Yes.
And also one of my favorite movies because it centers on the guy the whole time.
Yeah.
And I think it's just an amazing so movie. Funny. Forgetting Sarah Marshall is just one of the amazing. Best ever.
Truly the best.
Mm-hmm. And there's like even some more kind of gender bending roles, such as with The Proposal with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds. She's his boss and she makes him marry her for a green card. And it's like, it's what? Just so fun. Yes, but it's interesting. We talked about tropes with our book episode.
Yes.
But there's this whole new set of archetypes, I think, that come and exist within the movie scene.
Yeah, for sure. Because it's just, it's not like a deep dive into the characters. Mm-hmm. And you also like typically don't get like a narration of their lives where they're like, yeah. like in a book.
Essentially, there's just so many different rom-coms.
Exactly.
It is a ever-growing genre. It will never die yes, out.
It will never, never.
There's a rom-com out there, I think, for everybody.
For everyone, exactly.
I mean, even, like, the sports rom-com. Mm-hmm. Like, Bull Durham is one of my all-time favorite movies.
So
it is so good. Kevin Costner. We love to see it. I work at a minor league baseball stadium, and it takes place at a minor league baseball mm-hmm. stadium. And so there's something just kind of great yes, about the connection no, to that, you know? It's great to romanticize your life.
Exactly.
And I think it's so funny just having such a wide scope of rom-coms because yeah. all you got to do really is, I mean, in a city like Seattle, mm-hmm. when there's people buzzing around all the time, you pop in your earbuds and you listen to that music that exactly. makes you feel like a main character. I know yeah. that's cheesy, but it's
no,
true.
But it's true.
And you just walk around and you feel like you're in a rom-com.
Yeah, basically.
And maybe you're in your, like, conflict era and you're not having the romance. You have been on one too many bad dates. But that's the great thing about rom-coms is like there's always a resolution. So if you're at a terrible point in your life right now, just know it's gonna get better, because if you're the main character, you get a happy ending.
That's true.
Kind of just the way that it works in these movies. I think that's what I like about it too, is I'm not gonna yeah. leave the movie feeling like, where's the romance, where's the right. love in this world. I'm like reaffirmed, you know.
Yeah,
I'm with
no
it.
I yeah for sure I agree.
So after our in-depth breakdown of When Harry Met Sally, we wanted to
and the other ones.
We wanted to get more on the technical side of things so we can clearly talk about this incredible genre. And that's why today we brought in UW Film Club podcast lead Drew Favors.
Thank you so much for coming today, Drew. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So I guess our first question, you know, on the podcast, we got to get to know you a little bit more, and we want to know, like, what's your just general thoughts on rom-coms as a whole? You love them, you hate them, are they a guilty pleasure? What's your take?
I mean, yeah, they're probably more of a guilty pleasure, but I think they're amazing. I think, you know, that sort of formula has been done for hundreds of years, and it just works for a reason, you know?
Mm-hmm,
it's
totally.
Like, also, some of, like, the best movies are rom-coms, like, even from, like, the 40s and 50s. So, you can say it's pretty trope-heavy, but almost every other genre is, too. Mm-hmm. So, I kind of like the predictability. It's a nice appeal.
Do you have a favorite?
I mean, I would say Moonstruck with...
I don't know if I've ever seen that.
Yeah,
yeah, it's with Cher and Nicolas Cage.
Oh, that's amazing.
It works really well. Yeah, this is, like, the era when Nicolas Cage was, like, really popular, really, mm-hmm. really attractive.
No, good.
Yeah, I think I don't really have a least favorite either, though, if I were to say. I kind of like them all.
Right? Oh, I love them all equally, like our children.
Good.
So what do you say, like you said, the formula for rom-coms? What do you think that formula is, and how might you define this genre, and what like sets it apart from just being a romantic or a comedy or those kinds of things?
Yeah, I mean, it's always been really hard to narrow down the rom-com genre. I mean, because you have such a variety. I think one of the recent ones that really sort of changed the game is La La Land. I think everyone knows La La Land at this point.
Yep.
So it's very, like, magical. It's beautiful, amazing lighting, I would say. And we can talk about that later if you want to. But
definitely.
Yeah.
I think what suits it is, like, you have this sort of meetup between two people who don't traditionally work together, and then by the end they sort of fall in love, or in some cases they don't at all, just like with La La Land. So The plot can vary in between of what happens in the middle, but I'd say beginning and end, it's always usually just two, sometimes even three people. You can get like those love triangles or something like that. And then by the end, they either make it or don't make it. So what happens in between, I think, is what's most important.
Definitely.
Yeah, for sure.
And then going back to La La Land, we were just talking about the happily ever, ever after romance that's kind of dying out, where sometimes the people don't end up together.
Exactly.
We were talking about that and kind of the implications of that for the genre and just kind of romance as a whole. Yeah. Like bashing these unrealistic expectations.
Yeah, and especially I think like when people talk about rom-coms, it's like, if they do end up happily ever after, then it's kind of, like, deemed cheesy and, like, more, like, naive or childish. Versus, like, if they're not together like La La Land, then, like, oh, we're making, like, a point about love and this is more than just, like, a shallow rom-com. So, yeah, it's super interesting.
I mean, I would say the thing about rom-coms is that for the longest time they've not had a lot of credibility, like, in all of film history. So, and I think one of the reasons is just because, like, the audience is very female-heavy. And for that, it's just never gained serious recognition. Yeah. So you can argue that because it's a female-dominated genre, it doesn't really gain a lot of cultural legitimacy or critical, but definitely just doesn't get a lot of awards. So I think with the whole straying away from the happily ever after, when you see people suffering more, for some reason, they just get more awards. And I think with La La Land, like by the end where they don't make it, somehow this makes it more credible for awards. I don't know why, but I think you can definitely have movies that are still within the happily ever after genre and that make it. One example, if you've seen The Big Sick with Bruno Mangiani. Yes. Yeah, and like that's a story of him and his wife. And so it's a really cool thing how like that definitely sticks more to the sort of, I guess they make it in the end, idea. But it's still got a lot of like critical recognition. Like if whatever website you look it up, I don't know, but the reviews are still always very high. And then you see something like La La Land, which also has amazing like recognitions and awards. And so I see it as more of an evolution. Some people could also see it as an adaptation to like get more critical recognition. So I personally think it's okay when films don't always, the characters don't make it in the end. But I think it just needs to be done well. I think it's fine. So for some, they say it compromises the meaning of the genre. They say you always have to have, like, they always got to make it in the end. There's always got to be some nice, happy ending. But I don't really think you should have to adapt it for recognition. I think it's still nice.
Yeah,
I agree. And I think the whole happy ending thing, I mean, in a way, they got their happy ending.
Right.
So it's maybe not with the romance, but they both were very successful in their careers. They both made it, to say.
Exactly.
And so it's kind of changing this definition of what it really means to make it. And when you make a choice, like choosing your career over love, and you get that, that's, I don't want to say consequence, but like that's but this is how the cookie crumbles. Like, exactly. This is what happens.
Like, you know? Some people will look at me like, that is a happy ending. So it's not,
But it is interesting that the happy endings aren't just taken as seriously as kind of the tragedies or the misfortunes. And I mean, why not?
Right.
Like, why can't, when I sit down and watch a movie, I know that this isn't everyone's opinion, but I sit down and I want to walk away feeling good. I feel like there's enough yuckiness out there that when I am going to sit down and take 2 hours to consume something, I want to leave feeling maybe a little bit lighter or maybe a little bit better, which is why I love the genre.
Yeah. I feel like, for me, I mean, I'm okay with feeling not amazing after a movie. Like, I think it doesn't necessarily have to make you, like, happy. But I do think, like, you can take away things from rom-coms, just like you can take things away from non-happy movies. Like the idea that you like watching a movie is for you to take away something about
lessons,
exactly, like a lesson about society or something about like a theme. Like you can take away a lesson from 10 Things I Hate About You, just like you can take a lesson away from like, I don't even know. I can't even think of a serious movie.
No, I get that for sure.
I mean, I just think that you're sort of in the right here, and everyone agrees with you, because you have movies like Crazy Rich Asians and something like, if you've ever seen Long Shot with, I'm pretty sure it was Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron, that did very well, and it seems like it wasn't going to work. Even Scott Pilgrim, that's a rom-com. So, I mean,
definitely,
you have these movies that, like, they shouldn't work, and it seems cheesy, but everyone loves it, and I think, well, also, you sort of asked about, like, comedy and, like, romantic leaning. I think it just has to be, like, a really good balance. Like, you have famous old movies like It Happened One Night or The Shop Around the Corner, which are, like, they're really old. But, I mean,
the, love The Shop Around the Corner.
It's so good. I love that movie. That is kind of serious, and the comedy doesn't really appear all the time. There's some very low lows, but there's also moments to sort of break up the tension. And so I think if you've ever seen Punch Drunk Love as well, like, that one, I mean, that one's pretty odd, pretty serious, but then you have amazing comedic elements to it as well. So I think everyone needs a comfort movie or a guilty pleasure, but it's the fact that it is a guilty pleasure is sort of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. I agree. Yes. Like, I'm always kind of embarrassed to say, like, hey, we're going to watch a movie, and then it's always kind of like the, like, as long as it's no rom-coms. And I'm like, hey, you're X-ing out, like, half of my favorites of right movies. There. Yeah. And that's the kind of what we're talking about, too. There's so many subgenres within the romantic comedy thing. I feel like, honestly, there's got to be something out there for everyone.
Yeah.
You've got everything. Like, you were talking about even Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Yeah. Like, that is so dorky, cheesy, awesome. Love Michael Cera. Yeah. But then you've got something way more on the more serious side of things. Like, I don't even know if you could really consider Notting Hill a rom-com. I mean, it's very...
You can.
It's a whole spectrum. Everywhere.
Yeah.
You can find something that lands just about anywhere.
Agreed. So we did want to talk a little bit about casting for movies, because we talked a lot about Meg Ryan and how she's kind of like, especially in the, like, not even late 80s, it's like mostly like early 90s, she was like the image of like the rom-com, like, woman lead. So yeah, what's your thoughts about like the casting of a rom-com?
I think once you sort of enter the genre, you get stuck in that cycle, and people expect you to like remain there. So I think Meg Ryan, unfortunately, didn't get as many roles like after the 90s and stuff with You've Got Mail and, of course, When Harry Met Sally. I think casting overall, it's fine. One of the things is that they cast what people deem as like traditionally attractive, and so people go in expecting like these larger than life characters who are like so beautiful, so gorgeous, so handsome, but in reality some people don't appeal to that. Like, if I mentioned Punch Drunk Love, that's like Adam Sandler, and he's like, he dominated like the 90s and early 2000s with comedy. And then Paul Thomas Anderson came in and said, I want you for a romantic comedy, and it worked really well. So I think for casting, it's a slippery slope, because you can get people who remain there forever or eventually fade out of existence. Or sometimes you get people who do only one and they never do it again, and they do fine. So I think casting, like for me, I love Rachel McAdams so much, and so she was able to sort of escape that trap, which does not happen often. So casting always has these exceptions, but I think what goes into casting, you need someone who has a wide range of abilities, because you have to portray so many emotions in a rom-com. Like, you have to like go into the deepest parts of yourself and like, I guess, be yourself around your opposing partner or whatever in the movie, but then you also have to have range for comedy, which is really hard. So I think casting for rom-coms is probably one of the most difficult, because if it doesn't work, no one's gonna go see it.
Yeah,
like Marry Me with Owen Wilson and Jennifer Lopez. That does not work out.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah,
I think I've seen the cover of it.
And also, I feel like a big aspect would have to be chemistry. Like, even if you've got the two perfect looking people that you want for this role and they've got all the attributes you want, if you get them on screen and they just look uncomfortable with each other, that's not a rom-com that you want to see.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, intimacy coordination is also really important. Like, almost every rom-com always has someone on set trying to build that chemistry. And like you said, if it doesn't exist, people get uncomfortable watching it, because there's these two people that are forced to be in a situation that they don't want to be in. So I totally agree. Chemistry is probably the most important thing, which is why I love Moonstruck so much. Because absolutely amazing chemistry.
Yeah.
So in terms of like technical aspects of the rom-com genre, are there things that set it apart in terms of like filming and lighting? And I know music is something that we want to talk about with soundtracks. Music. How can we create this feel of love and light and all this good stuff?
Yeah, I mean, that's really hard to say, because the reason I love La La Land so much, I mean, the romance is great, but also the vivid colors
it's so gorgeous.
Beautiful. Every single frame, like, you have these vibrant blues, and like when they're up on the hill, like at the, I think, sunset or something, you have like the pink horizon like mixed in with the yellow dress of Stone, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, to me, lighting and color palette is probably one of the most important things. And if you have very soft lighting where it's almost like a watercolor, very bright lights and like very soft colors. So it's almost, I think you almost have to read it like a play sometimes as well. Like you can't have really fast cuts or edits. You have to have long moments with like a ton of dialogue, and the actors really have to carry the movie for me. So that's what I think goes into a great romantic comedy. And I don't know. I think, I hate to go back to Moonstruck again, but Moonstruck has like almost 10-minute scenes of people just talking, and I think it's like so romantic, and I love it.
No, it creates this intimate atmosphere for the viewer, I think, as well, to really get sucked into this world of beauty, and sometimes it's painful. And I love La La Land as an example, because it is just such a beautiful film to watch. Visually, it's just amazing. And it really helps you suck in to the story, and it really ties you, and it feels like you're feeling the things of the characters, as a good movie should, you know? It really should suck you into this world and make you feel like you're a part of it. And I think that's a very, very important aspect, especially for romantic comedies, when feelings are so on the surface.
Yeah,
I mean, another thing I probably should mention that also made La La Land amazing is the music. So Damien Chazelle, the director, he was a musician at one point, and so I think that definitely played into why the movie was so successful. The scores like really have to carry those long moments of dialogue, because when you have this background music that sort of elevates what they're saying and like makes it more emotional, like you get sucked into it, you get drawn in. So I think music and score are probably just as important to me as lighting. So you can have moments where the camera stays in one position for like the longest time, but if it's just them talking but there's no music or anything to like back it up, it can be a little uncomfortable. So it's up to the director to make a scene actually emotional and not devoid of any personality or humanity. So music, music, lighting, and I guess I don't know, good shot work.
I think soundtrack for me is one of the most important aspects of any film that I watch. I am a sucker for just listening to like movie scores as I'm walking to campus or trying to fall asleep or studying or whatever. It's my favorite thing ever. But also, aside from that, is also just the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And adding in these fun songs. I know, I feel like all rom-coms in the 90s to early 2000s, they have this like really good like Nora Jones. Is that kind of like the vibe that you're getting? I almost want to like open up my Spotify really quick.
Yeah, I mean, really, we should do like a round of favorite song from a rom-com soundtrack, because off the top of my head, I love She by Elvis Costello in Notting Hill. Like, the opening scene of Julia Roberts, and it's like all of these like magazines, and that she's in the like playing in the background is so good.
No, it's amazing.
Amazing. So good.
There's so and many. When Harry Met Sally, Harry Connick Jr.,
and
Bing Crosby, it just creates this really fun New York feel. I think that's just classic, and like, let's call the whole thing off, where they're kind of going back and forth. That sums up the entire film if you just listen to that song. Exactly. So there's so many things I just add so much. And I just think listening to the soundtrack, it just brings you right back there, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. I love rom-com soundtracks. My true passion in life.
Yeah, when Harry Met Sally, for the longest time, was literally my favorite romantic comedy. I thought it was perfect, because it talks about everything I covered. Lighting, like every season has a different sort of shade of, like, either yellow for fall or blue for winter, and I think that works super well. And also Meg Ryan and, oh my god, Billy Crystal. I forgot his name for a second. They work way too well together.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, chemistry. Like,
amazing on-screen chemistry. Yeah. So good.
I don't know if I have a favorite song or something, but there was, like, this vampire romantic comedy I watched called, like, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, and there's, like, this really beautiful scene where Death by White Lies plays. Which I never heard of it before. No, probably no one has.
Yeah, but I don't know, like, if I have, but I'm intrigued.
It's just like them dancing and getting to know each other for like a solid 5 minutes. The camera doesn't move at all, and I just think it's all in black and white. So obviously that makes it a little more romantic.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, that's probably my favorite song. And then in Punch Drunk Love, there's like a segment from Popeye that plays, but it's really good.
That's for me, I just watched My Best Friend's Wedding, so I'm biased. Oh, nice. But I love just... I mean, even the opening scene, but then they sing Say a Little Prayer for You, and they're in the restaurant, and it's like moments like that also that are just so authentic and so amazing. I love it. And even like Cameron Diaz's karaoke scene.
Yeah.
That's a really great use of music in a movie. I love that. Best Friend's Wedding.
Yeah. So I guess if we're to talk about like the future of rom-coms, like what What do you think is coming up for us? Like 2023, new movies. I know the most recent one I can think of off the top of my head is with Julia Roberts and George Clooney. They did like the one in Hawaii. I forget the name of it, but it like just came out.
It's like a Peacock original.
Yeah, or something. Like that. But yeah, what do you think? Like, is what should we be looking for?
I mean, I think La La Land kind of says it all. I think we're more going into the era of romantic comedies where either the guy doesn't always get the girl or whatever, mm-hmm. or we're going to start doing like less traditional gender roles, I think, mm-hmm. in romantic comedies, which I'm excited for.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think we're sort of getting out of the traditional formula, like I said, where like there's almost a meet cute and they always bump into each other like, oh my God, what are you doing here? And then like by the end, they always get together. So even like Wedding Crashers with like Vince mm-hmm. Vaughn and Owen Wilson, that's yes. also a romantic comedy, but that yes. one's kind of messed up. But yeah, I think the future, I'm hopeful, personally. I love romantic comedies, and I'm not really scared. I think more than anything, we're going to get some new and fresh ideas. Like,
for sure.
We remade A Star Is Born, like, what, three times at this point? So that one was like, you could say it's a romantic comedy. It's kind of difficult. That was more of a drama. But yeah, I'm excited for more formulaic ideas, and I want to see things that where people step outside the box. So it's hard to say for the future because it just hasn't happened yet.
No.
I think the path that we're heading towards is breaking away from the norms. Definitely. I think the last year has also showed that alone, because last year had amazing films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, we were talking about that a bit too, just like the different gender roles, and we had some even silly examples, like The Proposal.
Oh my God, I love The Proposal.
Right. And then even like Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where the rom-com is entirely focused on the guy, which I feel like is pretty rare within the genre. So just things like that. I'm really hopeful for rom-coms in the future. Mm-hmm. I hope we get another golden age. We need a new setting. Maybe no more New York.
Yeah.
Maybe no more
What's
New York.
What's the new New York, though?
Maybe Seattle could be the new New York.
Maybe.
At least maybe for our listeners.
Yes.
Maybe they'll go out and have a rom-com season.
Maybe.
We can only hope, right?
Right.
I would say just go watch as many romantic comedies as you can. I think they get neglected a lot of the times, and people are afraid to say it, but even Bridget Jones's Diary is amazing, despite some people thinking it's not. So, like, explore the genre. Like, see what you can find. And if you think it might fit in the genre, it probably does. And if you like it, don't be afraid to say it. Because I've definitely come around to being like, I think Bridesmaids is one of the greatest movies of all time.
It is one of the greatest movies. Yeah. The scene on the plane.
Oh my God.
It's the best scene of all time.
That's some of my favorite writing in a movie ever.
So funny. Good.
Yeah. I know. I was just talking about my dad. He grew up, house full of girls, my mom and I. Mm-hmm. And he always used to kind of clown on us, like, oh, I'm not watching another rom-com. And then one day I come home and he's watching Mean Girls by himself.
Yeah.
And I said, I knew you liked him.
Yeah.
And now he's a total sucker for him. Every Friday it's like, okay, what are we watching? What are we watching?
Awesome.
My dad grew up on a farm in Oklahoma, and like one of his favorite movies is Love Actually. So
he's
such a softie when it comes to romantic comedies.
Yes, I love Love Actually. We didn't talk about this, but I really love Crazy Stupid Love. I feel like that's a very well-rounded rom-com.
That's a
good
one.
It's got the element of surprise. It's got different storylines kind of going on. I love Steve Carell. And I love Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling in his.
And I love Emma Stone, and I just love everybody, so really, it's a great movie.
It's a good one.
Gotta love it.
I think, if anything, the Brits are going to take over romantic comedies in the future. They've always had a foothold on it.
That's
like,
true.
Even yesterday, with it was just Beatles propaganda. It's literally just a romantic comedy, so.
Yeah.
It's very true.
That's so true.
Yeah, we're hopeful.
Yeah.
We're hopeful.
Exactly.
Yeah, me too.
So thank you so much, Drew, for coming on. It was so great to have you.
Thank you so much. I feel like I had an actually intelligent conversation about rom-coms instead of me just blabbing on about them. This is exciting.
Exactly. And to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning into It's Complicated, the podcast. Please stick around because we will be here giving you advice on love, dating, relationships, friendships, and most importantly, love for yourself. So that everything can be a little less complicated.
Please follow us on Instagram at It's Complicated the Pod. Follow us on Spotify. And follow us to the theaters where our hands can brush as we reach for the popcorn and watch Hugh Grant up on screen. Thank you so much, you guys.